Hey, time for you to reach your full potential. Getting into health and fitness, this is what you're missing. Going harder, push it to the limit. Go on a journey with genetics coach, Laura Phillips. Yeah, here to take you to the next level. Been in the health and fitness industry since 07. Working with so many athletes, push it to the limit with world champions, yeah, and some Paralympians. Hey, working from Brisbane to Singapore. We train, we going hard, all out, we keep it raw. Laura Phillips, let's go. Hey, time for you to reach your full potential. Getting into health and fitness, this is what you're missing. Going harder, push it to the limit. Go on a journey with genetics coach, Laura Phillips. Yeah, here to take you to the next level. Been in the health and fitness industry since 07. Working with so many athletes, push it to the limit with world champions, yeah, and some Paralympians. Hey, working from Brisbane to Singapore. We train, we going hard, all out, we keep it raw. Laura Phillips, let's go.
In this week's episode of Real Talk, I get really real about my real ass journey in losing 15 kilograms, 15, and more than halving my body fat percentage, keeping that off over 12 years later. That's perhaps the more powerful and important part of this. I can really relate more than people realize when they express their concerns and frustrations about not being able to shift weight, not seeing what they feel they should see when they look in the mirror, not liking photos of themselves, feeling like there's a disconnect between what they see in the image and how they remember themselves looking. It's really, really relatable. And I want to unpack that in a live training. So this audio is from a live training I did on Zoom. You may hear me speaking with other people who participated and viewed online at the time. So that's what that's about, in case you're a little confused. But this is me breaking down some of the big shifts and needle movers which have been imperative to losing and keeping off the weight over 12 years after the matter. So get your notebooks out. There's plenty to take in and take down. I hope you enjoy this episode. If you do, let us know by leaving a comment below. And of course, be willing to share this episode and tag us in your post. Enjoy. All right, not going to lie, I am not the greatest person with technology, so apologies in advance should anything come up. I'm going to assume that you can hear me, though if for any reason you are not able to hear me, do let me know. Please write your questions, should you have any, in the chat box, please. Is Kat still with us? Okay, so I am going to just quickly check the technological side of things. Oh, amazing. There's always a first, right? I mean, there's always a first live, there's always a first email, there's always a first Instagram post, and it's usually met with technological challenges. So I hope this is working out for those viewing. Thank you for being here. I am just going to wait a few more moments to have people join and drop their questions. I would love to know what you want to know. So for this to be of the most valuable to those watching, please do share your questions and comments in the chat boxes, whether that's on Zoom or Facebook Live. Just share. I would love for this to be of value to you, so please do let me know. It's 6 minutes past the hour, so let's not take too much longer to get into this. Kat, if you have any questions, I would love to know what it is that I can answer for you, if there's anything that I can bring in terms of value and be really nitty gritty and specific on, that would be amazing. So please let me know how I can make this worthwhile for you.
but I do look forward to sharing. Thanks for joining, Lynette. Lovely to have you here. You haven't missed anything, only technological challenges so far, but I would love to have you mute yourself and let me know if you have any questions. Please just drop them in the chat box, whether that's on Zoom or whether that's on Facebook, regardless of the platform you're viewing from. Please let us know how I can bring value to the table for you. As you know, I have myself lost 15 kilos and kept that off over a 12, maybe now 13 year span. And to give you a little bit more of an in-depth background and introduction, I'm Laura Phillips. I am a high performance coach for C-suite executive women and female founders. I help these women get through their challenging lives so that they do not have to rely too much on caffeine and stimulants in order to get through all that they need to get through, because of course they have demanding lifestyles and busy schedules. So for me, it's super important that I work with these women hand in hand to ensure that what they're doing is very streamlined and focused to them, and that it's not adding to their additional stress levels and sources of stress. Okay, so again, thank you for joining. Is it Sadia? I'm not so sure how to pronounce it. Thank you so much for joining, and really, really lovely to have you here. We've been following each other for some time now, so like, oh my gosh, what a surreal moment to see your gorgeous face on screen. Thank you. Again, any questions, just leave them in the chat box, whether that's on Zoom or whether that's on Facebook Live. I'm looking at both platforms. I have my eyes and ears everywhere. So do just drop those questions in the chat box so that I can make sure I address what's relevant to you or the people you work with. Okay, I'm here for both. We're all on a journey ourselves, and I've lost and kept off 15 kilos. I have more than halved my body fat percentage, previously sitting much closer to 30% before this chapter of my journey began. And prior to that, I was really unwell, actually. A lot of people don't know this. It's really easy to see the fancy, beautiful, polished, filtered photos and videos on social media. And what we very rarely understand about a person is the other 99% of that iceberg. And we're all icebergs as far as I'm concerned. So let me shed some light on that. About 13 years ago now, even a little before then, I had a chronic inflammatory condition known as costochondritis. Okay, what that describes is inflammation in the cartilage connecting the rib cage to the sternum being the chest bone. That became inflamed on me for a number of reasons. I'm going to attribute a lot of that to stress, not enough sleep in my growing years, in my teenage years, and just poorly managed recovery from my training volume. So back then I was swimming at an elite level. I was swimming for about 12 years and covering 6 kilometers a session, 9 sessions a week. On top of that, I was doing 2 or 3 gym sessions a week, running once a week. I was competing at club nights every fortnight, and I was racing 3 of every 4 weekends a month for 8 to 9 months a year. Okay. So to say that I was into swimming is a massive understatement. Swimming was my entire existence. It was my entire identity. And I now know a lot more. Let's just say that. I'm really, really grateful for those swimming years and for all the experiences I had as a byproduct of that, including the chronically inflamed cartilage condition, which was incredibly painful. It meant I was unable to walk 500 meters down the road to a bus stop without being in an incredible amount of pain and unable to breathe. So it's been a journey. It's been a really, really, really long journey. And what I really want to highlight here, when I was thinking about my process and how I came to this point, there's a lot to mention. Okay. Again, humans are icebergs. We only barely even see 1% of 1% of a person and their existence and their journey. What I really, really, really want to highlight here was it took me quite some time to find the right person to help me with my condition and through my condition and through my recovery. I saw about 6 different specialists over the course of 2 or 3 years with varying degrees of efficacy. And that can be incredibly disheartening and discouraging when you spend 3 months on a waiting list to see someone who has 13 different university degrees plastered on their wall, and the help that they offer you doesn't end up being so helpful. You know, I didn't have one source of the right information that I could apply to my life to get me feeling well and better and back on my feet and back to moving, let alone exercise. Because again, walking to the bus stop was incredibly painful. Not even to consider or mention or factor in trying to get to the gym or go for a swim. That at the time was just not even something worth thinking about. So that was an enormous journey. And finding the right person was an enormous journey. And that's something I'm super passionate about. I want to be that one wealth of knowledge to the people I work with, to these C-suite executive women, these female founders and entrepreneurs who I work with. There's enough information out there with regards to health and enough misinformation. That is where I play an integral role in streamlining the delivery of that information. I want to get the right information to the right person based on where they're at. And you have to factor in their circumstances and their lifestyle to actually help them apply that. So information is one thing, the application of that is another. And having the right person to help you through that is just incredible. So I had to find the right person. That was a journey. The second thing I wanted to mention was when it came to losing the weight, of course, we can go into the science of calories in versus calories out and macros. And that, of course, has a role. But this is where people go wrong. People try and change their behaviors before changing their belief system. And so that is not conducive to long-term change. Why? Because what underpins your behavior is your belief system. So no point trying to change your behaviors if you aren't actually seeing the world in a different way. If you are not seeing yourself in a different way, the behaviors won't last, because ultimately we end up trying to prove ourselves wrong. We create this black or white scenario where if I can't lose the weight, I'm definitely going to succeed at not losing the weight. And I'm going to prove to myself time and time again that it's absolutely impossible for me to lose the weight and to keep it off, okay? So this is where people really slip up and stop themselves short in their own tracks of getting the change that they wish to see, because they start with behaviors. And behaviors are a great place to start if your belief system supports that. My belief system supported that, because the moment I was well enough to start exercising again. Okay. Once I had medical clearance to do that, and I was working with the right health and fitness professional who could really help me put one foot in front of the next, there was no shadow of a doubt in my mind that I could lose the weight. None. Zero. And I put my hand on my heart, swear on my mother's life, and I love her more than anything, that there was no doubt in my mind. Okay. Now, that's not to say that doubt is a bad thing, or that if you have doubt that you cannot succeed and that you cannot change that mindset or that headspace. Absolutely incorrect. Okay. But we want to be in a headspace where we are mostly sure most of the time, so that when doubt creeps in, we're not affected by it to the point where we go backwards or where we get in our own way and where we repeat self-sabotaging cycles. Okay. So I believed 1000% that I could lose the weight and keep it off, because I had seen myself do amazing things in the past. I knew all I needed to do was get back into exercise, which my body was now allowing me to do. So that was easy. And I enjoy exercise. I've been active from the day I could walk. And sport has always played a significant role in my life. So that was very, very second nature to me. And all I had to do was return to, you know, eating in a way. I really knew I needed to learn a little bit more about nutrition. And that's why I became a certified sports nutritionist, you know, later down the line. I knew that there was some learning to do that, but I knew that if I worked with my body, with the health and fitness professionals who were actually helping me, and if I continued to apply myself in terms of building a regular physical routine, that the weight would come off. And I had no deadline. There was no rush. I was incredibly compassionate and empathetic towards myself. At no point did I resent myself for putting on weight. And at no point did I think less about myself or less of myself for putting on that weight. I thought, the moment I stood on those scales, okay, so I started to get better. All the stars aligned. I also got a job at a gym and pool facility in my hometown of Brisbane. With that came free gym and pool membership. Amazing. The universe was speaking to me. I went to the gym, of course. I was now feeling well enough to do that. All right, two thumbs up. I didn't have scales at home. I never grew up with scales in my house. I had never really paid that much attention to my weight. I knew more or less what it sat around when I was swimming, but I never had scales in my house. I hadn't stepped on them in quite some time. And so I took a big breath. I stood on the scales that first day in the gym of my new workplace. I thought I'm going to do a workout. And I knew the weight would be higher. I knew it would be the highest I'd ever seen. I knew. I expected it because I'd been unwell. I had not been living the way that I had normally been living, the way that I'd been accustomed to living. My lifestyle had changed. I expected it. Did I expect to see my weight be over 70 kilos when I had always been around 60? No. The shock of my life. Let me tell you that much. It was the absolute, I was mortified. I was beyond shocked. And at the same time, as I said earlier, I was incredibly compassionate towards myself. I didn't think less of myself. It was just my reality. And I was very accepting of that. This is a byproduct of the illness I've experienced, the journey I've been on to get better, and it's where I'm at. And I can sit in that because this is the last time I weigh this amount. This is the last time I feel this way because now I'm able to do more. My body is letting me do more. So belief. And this is a big thing, especially in working with the clients I work with. I see that there's two different types of belief. One is outcome-based belief, okay? We see that we can do something because we've seen ourselves do it before, okay? So I see that I have woken up and brushed my teeth every morning since the age of 3. Okay, so I know that I'll brush my teeth tomorrow morning as well, because look at all the evidence I have to suggest that that's what I'll do. And then there's belief related to potential. And that is not attached to actually seeing yourself do that exact thing. I'll give you an example. I know that I will back squat 120 kilograms because I am applying all that I need to apply in order to get there. So belief in my eyes comes in two different categories. Outcome-based, I have evidence that I can and will do X because I've seen myself do X a million times before, right? And then there's belief based on potential, which says, I don't need to see myself do X to know that I can do Y, because if I apply this process and this process and this process and this process, and if I'm consistent in doing so, that is the roadmap and that is the pathway that will get me to do 120 kilo back squat. And this is where people have a lot of room for improvement in all aspects of life. And of course, in particular, with regards to health and fitness and well-being. So I'm very fortunate that in my upbringing, I had parents who told me to keep trying, and that the outcome, my first outcome, wasn't the final outcome. Okay. So it wasn't a matter of, oh, I tried to swim 100 freestyle under 1 minute 10. And the first time I tried, it didn't happen. Therefore, I quit. No, I was not allowed to quit. Quitting didn't happen under my roof. It doesn't happen under my roof either. Okay. This is the ripple effect I'm creating with the women I'm working with. We do not give up on ourselves, because between you now and you in the future is potential and is growth. So if we always say that the ceiling is here, that's as far as we get. And then the outcomes and results we have mirror that. So you have to be in a continual state of not burning yourself out. No, but asking yourself where you have set the ceiling and if you're okay with that. And if the ceiling is there because you put it there, or because you have physically pushed yourself so hard that you can't actually get up from the bottom of your 120 kilo back squat, there's a difference, right? So belief may sound really pretty and airy-fairy, and it may not seem as though it has anything to do with losing weight and keeping it off. But if a person has a history of yo-yo dieting, losing 5 kilos, putting on 7, losing 10 kilos, putting on 12, being on extreme fad diets, only being able to adhere to something for 30 days, 90 days, 6 months, their brain has an enormous bank of all the proof of them falling short of where they wanted to go. And it's very hard for the brain to ignore that. It's very challenging for the brain to set that aside and yet still try, even though they are expecting themselves to fail, because they have a gigantic bank of evidence to suggest that they are going to fail. So it's a little bit of a catch-22. Do you only believe that you're capable of doing something because you have seen yourself do something? Or do you make an effort to lean into that fear and lean into that discomfort and prove to yourself that, in fact, you do have potential to do more, achieve more, lose weight, keep it off? It becomes a little bit of a catch-22, right? So I can't emphasize that enough when it comes to the importance of belief. Again, I was able to lose, I have been and did lose that weight and keep it off, because at no point did doubt cross my mind. I already had a process to follow back from my swimming days. As an athlete, you get prepared for training the day before. Same goes for the gym. The women I work with, they put their clothes out, their workout outfit the day before, not 2 seconds before, the day before. It's an athletic mindset. I'm prepared as a process. I order my taxi to the gym half an hour beforehand. I've already had 500 milliliters of water in preparation of my session. I've already eaten a banana an hour before my training so that I have carbohydrates in me to fuel my workout. They know that when they have the structure of these processes, that they can continue to put one foot in front of the next, in front of the next, in front of the next. And they don't have to worry about the number on the scales or their body fat percentage. They know that if they apply the process and apply it to the point that it feels like second nature, it has no other choice but to happen. No other choice. If you apply A, B, C, D, E, F, G 100 times, 200 times, 500 times, 1,000 times, the change will occur. I just have a lot more reps than they do because this is my 13th year of training. And before that, I was a swimmer for 12 years. Okay. So self-belief is absolutely the most critical element when it comes to this. When people want to lose weight, often what they're saying is they don't want to sit in the discomfort of their own self-criticism and judgment. When people come to me and they urgently want to lose the weight, there's a sense of urgency. I want to lose this weight before summer. I need to lose 5 kilos before my wedding in 30 days. What they're actually saying is, I don't like how I feel towards me, and I don't believe I'll ever become unstuck. And I don't like that. That is an icky ass feeling. And so when we work with people who want to create these shifts and these changes, we actually want to tap into what they think about themselves. So we want to look at why they feel the way that they feel towards themselves. How do they see themselves? What is their perspective of themselves? And why did that end up becoming their perspective? And then we want to challenge the thoughts and feelings they have about themselves and shift that over time. When people start to see themselves in a different light, their whole world changes. So really, self-belief is where it's at. And it's not enough to say, just start believing in yourself. You got this. You can do it. That has a time and a place and it's great, but it's not deep enough. That's great on gym floor when my client is trying to deadlift 1.25 times their body weight, back squat their body weight. That has a time and place. When my client consistently has hesitation towards taking action, that to me is a sign that there's doubt up here. Why is that doubt there? Where did that come from? What is the origin of that? What is the essence of that? Okay. So from the perspective of my role, and the role I play in the lives of these women, a lot of it boils down to that, because we all have self-doubt. We all have limiting beliefs. And the real change and the real power of those shifts comes from evolving how people see themselves. From there, okay, process. So self-belief, tick. That for me was great. That was in order. The next thing that I need to get busy and working on was evolving my lifestyle. Now that I was well enough to move again, I really needed to build back those routines. And I started with where I was at. Again, I didn't force the behavior, these extreme behaviors of suddenly, now I need to go to the gym 5 or 6 times a week. That wouldn't have helped me. That would have been too much. My body would have gone backwards. The chronic inflammatory condition would have flared up. I was working at this gym and pool facility 3 times a week. And that was perfect. So my process, have lunch by a certain time each day. Make sure you have enough protein and carbohydrates in that meal. Have your workout wear ready and your work uniform ready to go. Leave home by a certain day. I was lucky I could walk to work. So I was ready. I was out the door by a certain time. I got to the workout facility, to the gym by a certain time. And I had a plan. Turn up, train, go to work, have my post-workout meal 3 times a week. 3 became easy. I do like exercise, in case you've not noticed. So 3 times a week became 4. 4 became routine. 4 became habit. 4 felt second nature to me. 4 sessions a week became 5. That was a big jump. Not going to lie. My body definitely noticed the 5th session. And now, routinely, it's 5 or 6 times a week. I'm usually lifting 90 to 120 minutes a day. And I'm doing cardio anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes, depending on the day. That was a process. And I would say it took me 3 years to get to the point of training 5 times a week consistently. It evolves over time. And that's the next thing. This needs to evolve as your lifestyle evolves. So a lot of people will start, and they'll start by trying to make 5 different changes all at once, not be able to sustain any of them, maybe sustain 1 or 2. They might increase their step count. Maybe they may be able to keep that up, but all the other things that they're working towards will slowly fade away because they've tried to change too much too soon. And people are not light switches. They think they are, but they're not. And so what we want to do is we want to start with where people are at. That's what I do with my women. We do an intrinsic deep dive audit. So we ascertain, what does life look like for you now, most days of the week, in most situations? What does life look like? What time are you getting up? What time are you going to bed? What's your duration of sleep? What's your quality of sleep? How many meals are you eating? You don't have time to eat. Got it. So then you're probably not eating enough protein. Got it. That's why you're feeling hungry at 3 p.m. and reaching for sugar. Got it. We start to piece all these elements together. Most people know where to create change in their life, but they don't think that they can get anywhere by creating small shifts. They think that unless they create 5 different changes overnight, then they're not going to see any change and it's not going to be worth it. They feel they have to go all in and be incredibly extreme. Otherwise, they're not going to see the number on the scales change. And yes, you can make yourself incredibly miserable losing 5 kilos in 30 days by cutting out alcohol and every carb that you can imagine, and not eating cheese and only eating green vegetables and lean protein. And I'll put money on the fact that those people will regain all that weight and then a little bit more. And it's not going to be a fun process for them. And again, that failure is only going to add to their evidence bank for the fact that they can't lose weight and keep it off. That dampens their belief. And then they have to wait for another 6, 12, 60 months before their motivation spikes again and they do something about it, usually by taking the same approach. So when we think about helping people, we want to meet them where they're at in order to make the biggest impact. We want to make sure we understand their lifestyle before we start giving them too much feedback, because there's a million different places to start when it comes to creating change. But again, we're not really helping people if we don't have that context and understanding. And most people know what they can start with and what they can work on in order to see a difference. But again, a lot of people don't give themselves the emotional space to celebrate that. I lost 500 grams. It's been 1 week. Am I ever going to lose the other 9.5 kilograms. When we give people permission to celebrate all wins, no matter how big or small, we start to build momentum and that snowballs. Success breeds success. And of course, you can't lose the 10th kilogram until you've lost the first 500 grams. Usually what stops people is their lack of consistency because they're impatient. Why? Because they can't handle their own self-judgment and criticism. Again, they don't want to sit in that discomfort of their own criticism and judgment. So what do? They then start to self-sabotage and they give up, because if they can't succeed, they'll succeed at failing. That's what happens. So meet people where they're at. I met myself where I was at. I was at a place where I could start to exercise again. I was at a place where I could start to lift weights again. I was at a place where I could feasibly go to the gym and train for an hour, maybe an hour and a half. And that felt good. And it worked with my lifestyle. I didn't force myself to run because pardon my French, but fuck running. I hate running. I run if there's a tsunami and I run if there's a really good sale, but they're the only two occasions. Okay. So if there's a tidal wave coming, yeah, maybe I'll try. If there's a really good sale, you can bet that I'm going to run, but there would have been no point in me forcing myself to run. I wouldn't have sustained that because, again, I just don't like running. It doesn't feel good for my body, and that's okay. Each to their own. Some people love it. I don't get you, but that's great. So meet yourself where you're at. Have someone work with you and understand you and what your lifestyle is and what feasibly works for you. No point forcing something. The moment something feels forced or deprived, nothing is going to stick. And then help people develop processes that they can apply based on where they're at. Again, for me, getting my workout ready, my workout wear, my active wear ready the day before, easy, helps me feel organized, done. Meal prep on the weekends, easy, helps me stay organized, makes it easier for me to do my workouts during the week. I'm not rushing around trying to find the right fuel. That to me is worth it. Making sure I have my gigantic 2-liter water bottle full before my day begins, easy, done. And these are daily processes for me, or weekly processes, which makes the rest of my day and my week so incredibly seamless. It's actually harder to not exercise because of it. Okay. I just want to touch on some of the questions that you've asked. Okay. So when you get clients to follow an 80-20 rule when it comes to nutrition to achieve their goals. Good question. You don't, unless they're at that point. So if someone is currently more like 30-70, as in they're eating well and clean, which are very vague terms, by the way. If they're doing that 30% of the time and the other 70%, maybe it's fast food, it's takeaway, it's eating from convenience stores, it's like a coffee and what, like a snack bar from a corner store, then that is too much of a change too soon. So the answer is you don't. Again, you meet people where they're at. If they're currently 30-70, try and get them to 50-50. In the next 12 to 16 weeks. That's a better goal to have. That's then sustainable. That is then teaching people life skills. It takes 66 habits at least to form a habit. 66 days, that's 10 weeks, right? Minimum 10 weeks to form one habit. So you need to work with the psychology of how people create change here. That's not how people create change. It's not. Again, we're not light switches. We don't on and off things. Off carbs, off alcohol, off cheese, off, you know, late nights with colleagues. No, okay. It's more like a dial. Things are constantly shifting, sliding up and down. More like a dial. It's not an on or off, right? So what we want to do instead is shift. We want to shift the dial up a bit. If they're currently at 30-70, cool. How do we get them to 50-50? If that's what they want, if they have no interest in that, that's another conversation. Again, it's not for us to force things onto people. No one forced me to lose weight, right? If I felt like someone was trying to force me to lose weight, maybe I'd be sharing a very different story. It came from within. All of this worked because it came from within. Two, it came from a place of being well enough to do so, which previously I was not, right? With my chronic inflammation, I was not well enough to move, let alone exercise. So it came from intrinsic drive and being well enough to do these things. So that's my take on that. You do a lot of in-person training, and I know my clients do push themselves to be outside of the gym. They slack with nutrition. How can I help them see results? Again, it's just having a very honest conversation. Sandra, we know that changes in body composition approximately come down to a 70% shift in nutrition and a 30% shift in exercise. You're really good on the exercise component. Is nutrition something that you want to work on? Yes or no? If no, can't make them change. You can't force anyone to change. Okay. Sandra, great. Okay, you do want some help on nutrition. Amazing. Where would you like to start with that? Do you feel that you're drinking enough water? Do you feel that you're eating enough protein each day to support your goals? Do you feel like you're just not organized enough when it comes to eating at lunchtime? Does lunchtime get chaotic with your back-to-back meetings and suddenly it's like 2 p.m. and you're ravenous because you haven't eaten since breakfast? Like, again, what is their reality? How much of their reality do you understand? Your suggestions should be tailored to their reality, not to some 80-20 golden rule principle. No, like that's great. That's nice. We can aspire to that, But some people will never actually get there. And you have to ask yourself, if you want to work with those people, that's a personal choice. For me, it's about how do we shift the needle? 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 How do we shift it in a way that makes sense to you based on your current lifestyle? How do we build that to a point that it becomes second nature? Very easy to replicate and rinse and repeat and reassess, rinse and repeat and reassess. That journey looks different for every single person. That's the job of a coach to navigate. So again, there's a million different angles that you can take. For me, I had to get better. I had to find the right person who could help me get better. Then when I was actually well enough to exercise, I had medical clearance to go to the gym. Then it was about creating those processes that would support my ambition and support my goals. So getting my activewear ready, having lunch ready, leaving the house by a certain time, having my uniform ready, having my post-training meal ready. They were the big things. Repeat, 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 repeat. Once, three times a week felt good, easy, doable, achievable, like back of my hand, then it became four times a week. That was driven by me. That's what I wanted. And, you know, if I only ever did three times a week, also okay. Why did it become four? That's what I wanted, right? So it's about having that honest conversation with a person. Do they have the awareness that nutrition can impact their results so drastically? Do they have limiting beliefs surrounding nutrition? If so, what are they? What is their lifestyle like? What is preventing them from having the nutrition element as figured out or as sorted as we would maybe hope for them to have? What's missing there? Is breakfast really good? Lunch not so great? And then dinner also not so great because lunch was not so great? Is there a domino effect? You know, that's the role of a coach to understand. If you don't understand that, that's a conversation. What do I think as a coach is the pathway to get clients to commit to consistent nutrition and training to achieve their goals? Again, if people are not being consistent, two questions come to mind. Do they really want that thing that they're working towards? Right? Because grit is passion and perseverance. Okay. So we want people to have grit. We want them to be able to persevere when times are tough, and we want them to feel passionate. Like, yes, this is going to benefit me. Eating well and eating my vegetables, eating a, you know, 1.5 grams of protein per kilo of what I weigh each day, you know, hydrating myself, that is going to allow me to feel so much better to do the mundane day-to-day stuff. And so it's easy to get excited about it, or it's easier to do it because I know that I'm going to feel better for it. So does the person actually want what is being worked towards? If consistency is an issue, maybe it's their lifestyle too. If they're frequent flyers, if they're traveling a lot for business, then that is challenging. But then again, that's the role of a coach to offer that support there. So then we're going to do Zoom sessions when you're traveling. You're going to have online programs available when you're traveling, when the time zones are too different for the two of us to be on Zoom. That's the role of a coach, right? So if they're not consistent, you have to ask yourself, what support are they not receiving? And do they really want what is being worked towards? Because if there's no intrinsic drive, and if there's no intrinsic, you know, direction, then unlikely it's going to be achieved. It's easier to be consistent with something that you enjoy, right? Hence, it's easy for me to exercise 5-6 times a week for the last, like, God knows how long, 8 years, I'm going to approximate. Before then, it was a little less. It was more like 4-5 times a week, 3-4 times a week, because I was still getting back up on my feet. You know, I was unwell for some time, so I couldn't jump straight back into 5-6 times a week. It didn't make sense. I was not there yet, but it's easy because I enjoy it and because I want the benefits of doing these things. Okay. So that's what comes to mind. And do I give my clients a list of vitamins and supplements to take when you're starting to work with them? Good question. I really, really, really like magnesium. Okay, pronunciation can vary. Bisglycinate, a glycinated form of magnesium, because as far as I've read, it's the second most common nutritional deficiency after vitamin D. So fair to say, a lot of people are going to be deficient in magnesium. It's responsible for over 200 roles and processes that occur within the body. So to say its impact is great and vast is an understatement. And we know it's an electrolyte, which is incredibly important when you live on the equator, which I'm calling from Singapore today. So when we sweat a lot, of course, we need to replace the fluid, but also we need to replace the electrolytes, magnesium being a common electrolyte. It's also a very challenging nutrient to get from food alone because of depleting soil qualities. So I would say I recommend magnesium to more or less everyone. Also improves their sleep quality, you know, and if I want to torture people 3 or 4 times a week, then I want them to recover well. And magnesium helps with recovery. We know that. It also helps with sleep, and sleep is linked to recovery. So for sure, magnesium. Look, questions about protein powders I get all the time. If someone is busy, which, you know, we're all busy, but if it's very challenging for them to get enough protein from sitting down and eating a full meal, then yeah, it's better that they get that protein than that they don't get that protein, in my eyes. Now, yeah, it would be great if they could get it from natural sources, such as chicken, such as tempeh, tofu, eggs, beef, seafood. Like, yeah, that would be great. But again, what is that person's reality? If they're an oncologist and they're on their feet and they are not able to sit down and eat lunch, let alone a snack, then I have to get that person fed somehow. And that to me is much more valuable than trying to do it the quote unquote golden way, or the right way, or the wholesome way, right? So again, it's understanding that person. And then allowing them to build those skills and repeat those skills. And when the skills become second nature, refine. So that's when we have a conversation. We say, okay, these are the goals that we set for the year. It's almost April. We are on track to achieve A, B, and C. D, we're a little off track. So maybe it's because the person has been traveling more than usual. Maybe it's because the person was unwell for some time. And it's okay that we're off track with D. Do we want to redirect? Do we want to adjust that? Do we want to not focus on it for now? Maybe revisit it in 4 months? Where do you want to take it? Because at the end of the day, there should be leadership from both sides. There should be leadership from the person you're working with in terms of their intrinsic drive and desires. And as a coach, you should be leading them towards achieving that. That's where you help them apply the information and build skills. That person comes to us because they probably have too much information, not enough time to make sense of the information. And thus they feel overwhelmed and like they're going nowhere, and that they're just drowning in information and life and parenthood and everything else. So that's where we step in, right? It's going, okay, you have all this information, you have all these questions. Let me condense that for you. Based on where you're at now, you need to focus on A, B, and C, and just getting really good at applying A, B, and C most days of the week. Maybe that looks like a habit tracking app. Perhaps it means downloading a habit tracking app and we put 2 or 3 different habits in there. We get daily reminders and people can just log that. Drink a cup of water. Boom. Tick. We set 3 of those reminders in the phone a day, 4 of those reminders in the phone a day. What do you know? By the end of 8 weeks, the person is very consistently getting their water intake closer to 3 liters. Then once that is second nature, cool, time to recalibrate. What's the next thing that we work on? Again, that's just the role of a good coach. So, and that's how I've lost and kept off 15 kilos. And it would be about 16% body fat that I've parted with, because I've developed processes that have allowed me to integrate fitness into my life. And because it's all intrinsically driven and I enjoy it, I'm consistent with it. It doesn't feel like an effort to get to do a workout. I mean, I work in a gym, so it's one less barrier to entry. I don't have to travel here, but I want the benefit of having done the workout. And because I want the benefit of having done the workout, even if I'm not so motivated and not so excited to do it, it's very easy to overcome that. So again, it all comes back to what feels good for you where you're at. What feels good for you based on where you want to take things. I know that there's certain things I need to do in order to add another 10 kilos to my back squat. They're things that I'm working on a routine basis. I know what I have to do every day and every week and every month in order to get closer to that. And again, I believe that I will get there, not because I've done it. It's because I believe in my potential. I believe in the space between where I am now and where I'm going. I believe that I can get myself to that point. This whole journey of where I am and where I'm going to, I know I can make those connections and I can feel. So welcome back, Lynette. Again, if your clients don't believe in themselves, nothing's going to change. If they don't believe that they can create those changes, trust me, change will not be sustained. How do we help people believe in themselves? By reminding them that they don't have to base their belief only off of outcomes. You don't need evidence of having done something to know that you can. if that's how society operated, we never would have put a human on the moon, right? We would have gone, oh, look, we've never put a human on the moon, thus we cannot put a human on the moon. Or the earth is flat, thus I'm not going to get in a ship and sail off the edge of the earth. So I'm just going to stay on this bit of land for the rest of my life and just enjoy this bit of land, right? It's going, there is so much that you're capable of that you are yet to see from yourself. And it's that space there which we can start to believe in as well, right? And a lot of that comes down to consistently challenging yourself to do things that make you go, oh my God, I don't know if I can do that. And just rising to the occasion. Because what's the worst that could happen? You fail, you can still learn, which means that next time you'll probably get closer. So letting yourself fail, letting your clients fail, and letting them learn from that allows them to build that potential belief, you know, the belief in what they can do, not just what they have only done. I'm just seeing there's a new message. Do you really have a clients really doing you? I'm so close to doing things. Great question. Okay. So maybe let me just say that out loud for the recording. Great question. Thank you so much. Because of my deep interest in clients' realities, would I consider doing a psychology course and add that to my qualifications as a fitness coach? Yeah, I actually thought about becoming a sports psychologist. I have a degree in public health, and one of my subjects was psychology, in fact. So that was a very, very small component, but I am incredibly interested in psychology. Also too, from my own experience as an athlete, as a swimmer, and also I did sailing. I went to the World Championships for sailing, which I didn't share earlier. But yes, because to me, the mind is the engine behind everything else. And so we optimize every other area of life when we optimize the way that we think, when we optimize our belief system. So absolutely, I find it to be really, really interesting. Yeah, it's definitely an element that we don't get taught that I think is really, really overlooked when it comes to like certifications for personal trainers. Myself, I did a certificate 3 and 4 in fitness, which is, I believe, an Australian roadmap to becoming a personal trainer. Of course, you can do it in university as well. So it used to be called human movement studies. Now it's exercise physiology or exercise science. I think they're the two different pathways people typically go down. At the end of the day, the people we work with are not robots. And I think that's where the mismatch is when it comes to the curriculum and when it comes to the application. Because you can have someone who you know can deadlift 60 kilos and for whatever reason, oh, great example, this has happened to me. One of my amazing clients, I know what she can deadlift. She has deadlifted 86.5 kilograms before, which was about 1.25 times her body weight as her 1 RM. Okay. And I once trained her in a different facility, same company, different location. The vibes from the different environments, really different. So she would typically train here, which is our CBD location. It's nice height ceilings, don't get me wrong, but lower ceilings compared to the other location. It's a bit more grungy, a bit more intense here, more machines, there's a bit more equipment. And the other location is a little bit more spa-like, higher ceilings, it's brighter area. It's just a very, very different vibe. We deadlifted that day, or at least we tried to. And brain, just very, very different headspace, very, very different outcomes. And we put it down to it being an unfamiliar environment. She had, up until that point, I think, done more or less all of her sessions here. And so she was very affected by the different environment, the different space. And I can relate to that because I personally prefer to train myself at this facility if I'm training myself in my own workplace. And I have access to a few different gyms. So I'm very, very fortunate that I have so many options. I would never go out of my way to choose the other location to work out of. Again, it's just not my vibe. I like the intensity of this space. It is more conducive to me for training. That's cool. Some people are the opposite. So we don't learn about this, do we? And that's why creating an environment in which you can thrive is so critical to your cognitive work, to sleep, to training, and also the environment you create when you're working with your clients too. How safe do they feel in that space? How safe do they feel physically, but also mentally, emotionally? How much can they open up and reveal to you? How self-conscious do they feel? How confident do they feel? Do they have access to mirrors where they can see themselves in real time performing a movement? Because if they're a visual learner, which is most people, they're going to need that. They're not going to feel as safe if they're not in front of a mirror because they can't see what's going on. Versus a kinesthetic learner who is less reliant on a mirror, who is much more touch, physical sensation oriented, is not going to be so bothered by that. But they may be more sensitive to temperature. So they may prefer a warmer environment versus a cooler environment. So these are all things to factor in, and certainly not something that we are educated on in our certifications. And I don't think it would really be covered in university. My degree being public health is actually quite different. It's not so fitness specific, hence why I did a certificate 3 and 4 in fitness thereafter. But I'm not sure to what degree psychology is covered. But again, humans, as much as we like to behave like robots at times and we think that we're machines, we are not. And yes, the more you connect with your clients and make an effort to understand your clients' realities and how that affects their mood and how that affects their movement, the more we can help them, I feel. Any questions from Lynette? Thanks for being here, Lynette, by the way. Any questions, feel free to drop them in the chat box, either on Zoom or on Facebook. No questions. Beautiful. Okay, great. Lynette, did you learn a thing or two? Did that provide you with some value or context? Any unanswered queries that come to mind? I would love to know if I can help answer anything else. Thank you so much for your questions. Really, really well thought out questions. And this has been recorded too, so I can of course send the recording should you want to refer back to it. I'll get your email address from Instagram. Sadia, Lynette, if you would like the recording, do just message me as well so that I can forward this to you. And yeah, if you want to connect and learn anything else about the way I work with people, of course, more than welcome to pick my brain. Thank you, Lynette. Love the idea of belief before behavior. Yeah, see, this is really what people don't get. They think, oh, well, to lose weight, I need to exercise more. I need to burn more calories. I need to eat differently. But whether we keep going with that really comes down to how we see ourselves, first and foremost, how you see yourself. Do you see yourself as someone who is in alignment between what you say and what you do? If not, well, nothing is going to change, like nothing, okay? Because think about integrity as a bicycle wheel. And let's say you say that you're going to take the rubbish out at 5 p.m. and you don't. The spoke in the wheel becomes broken. It's a great analogy that my coach actually gave to me. So I should mention him, Coach Cody, Cody McAuliffe, he's excellent. The next time it happens, you say, I'm going to get up and I'm going to go for a run. And if you don't do that, another spoke on the wheel gets broken. And then we say, okay, well, I'm going to have a healthy breakfast. I didn't go for a run. Okay. I'm going to make sure I have a really healthy breakfast. And so you don't. It doesn't happen. Maybe you go out with friends instead and you have a really, really heavy, big breakfast, and nothing wrong with that, but it's not quite in alignment with where you're looking to take things. Again, another spoke in the wheel is broken. How does a wheel function if all the spokes are broken? Probably not going to drive very far on your bicycle, are you? So we really want to think about the alignment between what you say you're going to do and what you actually do. Okay, when there's congruence there, when there's alignment there, when your integrity is intact, then we can seamlessly take action. But none of that can happen if you think that at the end of the day, you'll never lose 10 kilos, you'll never lose 5 kilos. You'll always be the heaviest person in the room. You'll never have your pre-pregnancy body. And I'm not saying any of these metrics are good or should be worked towards. They're just examples, okay? So no criticism and no judgment there. But we really need to go a layer deeper. And instead of just forcing habits and forcing a change of habits, forcing a change of behaviors, hoping they will become habits. Instead, we want to look within, go a layer deeper, and connect with what we think about ourselves first. And if we're a little bit out of alignment there, if we don't love those thoughts so much, that's where a lot of the work needs to first occur so that we can change our behaviors and so that we can continue to repeat those evolved behaviors to the point that they become habits. But again, a lot of people, they just want to burn more calories, change the way that they eat, cut foods out of their diet. Usually it's food they enjoy. And what happens? They end up completely miserable. And it's no surprise that none of that is sustained. So yeah, I really appreciate you coming and sharing all those awesome questions. Mind over matter. Yes, I think really the mind is the engine and it all starts up there. When we optimize the way that we think, we can optimize for performance, so physical performance. But again, that's where a lot of people don't quite make the shifts because they don't know that. And create a visual of how you envision your future self. But yeah, exactly. Habit by habit. Yes. So habits, what forms a habit is repeated behavior. What informs our behavior is what we think about ourselves. And that's really where the change begins. I was able to lose and keep off the weight that I've lost and the body fat that I've lost because I had no doubt whatsoever that I could do that. And not to say that doubt's a bad thing. Often doubt is actually a healthy thing within reason. But when it prevents us from taking action or getting the traction that we want to, then it is really, really counterproductive. And that's when doubt is unhelpful. And maybe the dial on our doubt is a bit high. And that's when we really want to make an effort to shift that down and increase our self-belief. And how do we do that? By challenging ourselves to do things that we don't think we can do. That's the shortcut. It's not a shortcut. It's really going, that weight looks heavy and it scares me a bit. And I'm still going to try and lift it. And of course, hopefully you do that with some supervision and under the right guidance. But there's no shortcut to self-belief. It's really going, that seems scary. I'm going to try it anyway. And even if I fall, even if I fail, I can learn and grow as a result of that. And growing is still a helpful thing for me. Growth is still powerful. Growth is still important. Growth is still valuable. So at the end of the day, I still win, okay? There's absolutely no shortcut. That's exactly what it is. It can look like a challenging conversation, right? So it's anything that seems challenging, really, whether it's emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually, it's about going, oh, that looks like a challenge. I'm going to do it. Because to me, a challenge requires me to grow and growth allows me to expand and evolve and shift and continue to enjoy life in new in different ways, and that's what I'm here for. So that's the hunch. There's no shortcut. It's just a process of doing that time and 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 time again. And that's one thing that I love about sport and exercise. It invites that opportunity like 30, 40, 50 times a session. And we don't get that elsewhere in life. We don't get that in work. Sure, we can have challenging conversations. We may have to fire people. We may have to fire clients. We may have to let people go because the market has shifted. But we don't get the opportunity in such a condensed time frame to challenge ourselves where we go, don't know about that, but I'm going to try. And for me, yeah, it can be for 6 different exercises, 8 different exercises, same for my clients in an hour. And how powerful is that? When you multiply that by 3 or 4 times a week, by 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 12 years, 13 years, it really makes a heck of a difference to your character and a person's character. So that's, again, one thing that I really, really love about sport and exercise. It invites you to step into that discomfort in a lot of ways, at a lot of different times. And I don't feel that we get that elsewhere in life. And I'm a musician. I know how to play the piano and the violin. So even reflecting on that, it's definitely not the same experience. But yeah, I hope that helps. Thank you so much for joining. Yeah, the magic sauce is that there's no magic sauce. There's no shortcut. It is really going back to what you think about yourself and asking yourself whether that's attached to outcomes. And or if you are also looking at your potential and you believe in yourself because you know that you have potential and that you can get yourself somewhere if you develop processes and apply them and are consistent with them. If you can be consistent and patient, well, you know, a lot can change. A lot of people don't endure that because they can't sit in their own self-judgment and criticism. And so they, you know, if they can't be right about themselves, they'll definitely be wrong. You know, if they can't prove to themselves they can lose 10 kilos, they will make sure that they are absolutely correct, that they can never lose that weight and never keep it off. And we're really, really good at defaulting. We're really good at repeating what we have always done, what is always familiar. And that's why it is so important to challenge our thoughts, because we always think the way we've always thought, we'll always get what we've always got. And that's, you know, a critical part of our role as a coach and a performance coach at that, is allowing people to create those shifts so that they can get more out of life in more ways. So I really, really appreciate your attendance. If you would like a copy, please just send me your best email address. Once the recording is put together, I will send it your way. And any other questions that come up following this conversation, feel free to send them my way as well, because I know that sometimes it takes a while for this to digest and you may have some follow-up thoughts. So please feel free to send them my way as well. I'll do my best to get back to you and respond. And if you want to learn more about how I work with people, again, more than happy to have a conversation surrounding that. I am going to do more lives of this nature in the following weeks. If you have any suggested topics or anything you'd really specifically like me to cover, I'm very, very open to your suggestions too. So please don't be a stranger. Let me know what that looks like. But I really, really thank you again and hope to see you on the next live. We're looking to do these weekly for the next at least 3 weeks, if not longer. So thank you so much. And I'll send you the recording. Just do pass me your email address so I can do that and get that over to you. Have a beautiful Friday and enjoy the weekend. And I'll get this to you ASAP. Thank you so much. See you for now. Bye.
Guys, that's it. That's a wrap. That's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of Real Talk with your gal pal. That's me, Laura Rogers. Please be sure to leave us a review, give us your feedback on what else you would like me to talk about. I always want to deliver content on things that excite you and that are going to benefit you in your health and fitness journey. So do give us a review. Before you forget, I know you're busy. I got to run off and record another episode. Do check us out on the other social media platforms listed below as well, because you might just like what you see or hear there. So, you know, be sure to do that. I look forward to catching up with you in the next episode. And again, please leave us a review. Let us know your thoughts. It would mean the absolute world to me. Stay healthy, and I'll see you in the next one.